The following interview was conducted on behalf of the oral history program of the Century High School. The interviewer is Carlos Perez. The interviewer is Martin Toledo. The interview took place at Century at 2:13 in May 18. So the first question to start the interview is going to be, how long have you lived in Hillsborough community?
Well, I've worked in Hillsborough for 27 years.
Okay, and were you born here?
No, I was born in California, and I was raised in San Fernando, California.
So, how did you get here?
Back in 1978, I applied for a counseling position at J.B. Thomas Junior High. It was a junior high then. And I was hired as a counselor. And so I came to work as a counselor in the district gradually, or como se dice en español, de poquito a poquito, I moved up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the second question is, what have been your involvement with the issue of crime and law enforcement in the community?
The issue of crime and what else?
And the law enforcement in the community.
Well, in my jobs that I've had as a staff member for the Hillsborough School District, I have been involved extensively with law enforcement and with crime. As a principal, I was a principal for a period of time. Obviously, I worked to make sure that the kids behaved themselves. I was an assistant principal at Evergreen when Evergreen first opened. I was an assistant principal at Pointer after that. I was a principal at David Hill, and then a principal at Thomas Junior High that was a 7th through 9th grade school. And so I worked with our police department, I worked with our students to make sure that they were following the rules, that they didn't bring weapons, that they behaved themselves, that they didn't involve or engage in crime during that period of time. After I was a principal at Thomas, I moved to the district office. And at that point, I became responsible for school safety district-wide. So I put together the contract that we have with the police department, because the police department has officers in our schools. I think you've seen them around here.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a contract with them. I work with them to develop the contract. I review every school safety plan to make sure that Mrs. Montgomery here at Century and the other principals have put together plans to make sure kids are safe in their school. I work with the school principals to make sure that they know what the rules are in terms of our policies on weapons and other criminal activity in the schools, like gang behavior and drugs and alcohol and those kinds of things. So I guess to answer your question, my responsibility is police, crime, safety. My current job.
Okay, for question number three is, what have been your jobs in Hillsborough School District?
What have been my jobs?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I kind of talked about that a little bit. I started out as a counselor, and I was a counselor for a few years at Thomas Junior High. Then I moved to Evergreen as a counselor, and then I became an assistant principal at Evergreen. Then I got transferred to Pointer and became an assistant principal there. Then I was a principal at Pointer. And then I became a principal at David Hill Elementary School. Then I became a principal at Thomas Junior High. Then I became the director of secondary schools, so I was responsible for all of the junior highs and high schools. After that, I was executive director of K-8 operations. That meant that I worked with someone else, and we kind of made sure that all of the principals of the elementary schools and middle schools were meeting all of the requirements of the district. Then I became an associate superintendent of support services, so I'm responsible for 5 departments: personnel, transportation, facilities, information services, and nutrition services, so 5 departments. Then I became deputy superintendent, and they added the Office of Hispanic Outreach and Safety. And right now, that's my base. A lot of different jobs.
Yeah, too many. Okay, question number 4 is, how have the issues of crime and enforcement in schools changed over time since the 1980s to 2005?
Well, in 1980 to 2005, in 1980, I would still have been a school counselor. And the biggest issues that we had in 1980 as a school counselor in terms of crime, you're talking about crime in schools,
yeah,
or crime in the community?
Crime in school.
Okay. The kinds of problems that we had were kids got into occasional fights. We had situations where sometimes students would take something or drink something that they shouldn't, you know, alcohol or have some kind of a drug. But it didn't happen often, but, you know, that there was that kind of an element. So it was fighting or drug and alcohol use. But we didn't see a lot of issues of weapons. We didn't see a lot of gang behavior. We didn't see a lot of that kind of stuff. And I guess that's the difference, because since then, when we had back in 1980, when we had fighting and we had some drug use and you've always, and we had some vandalism when kids break things or they write things on the wall or that kind of stuff. But when they wrote things on the wall, they wrote things like, Mr. So-and-so sucks, or something like that. You know, they would write that kind of
something.
They wouldn't write, you know, like, you know, bad words, profanity, or anything like that, but they wrote those kinds. That was vandalism. So those were the kinds of issues. Now, you know, we worry about kids bringing guns to school, kids selling drugs at school. The drugs now are more potent, more stronger, so we worry about those kinds of things. We worry about somebody coming into a school to kill people. You know, we worry about someone coming to a school and kidnapping somebody. We worry about gangs, because now we have gangs in our schools. Those are the kinds of differences, more severe kinds of problems. You know, back here, kids fought, so you got a bloody nose. Maybe you got a black eye, but it was nothing more than that. Nowadays, with weapons and guns and so forth, you know, you can wind up with someone being dead. And we've seen that in Columbine and Thurston and other high schools that have happened, where kids have come with weapons and kids killed students. Or we've seen situations now where in other places kids get kidnapped, like in Oregon City, like these 2 little girls that got kidnapped in Oregon City on their way to school and they find them dead. You know, that happened a few years ago.
So how do you feel about all the crime?
Well, you know, those are the things that we worry about, but we avoid those things with careful planning, careful training, and training is not only for students but also for staff. So do I like the crime? I don't. But we work hard to prevent it. We work hard to prevent it, because what we don't want is for those things to happen. So that's one of the reasons, for example, we have police in our schools now. Back in 1980, we didn't have police in our schools. Now we have police in our schools because if we think you have a weapon. I'm not going to ask you for the weapon, or Mrs. Montgomery isn't going to necessarily ask you for the weapon. As Officer Hess, who's here, or one of the other officers that might be here, is going to come to you, and he's going to be holding his gun, and he's going to say, give me that weapon. Because, you know, he doesn't know what you're going to do with it. So it's a little more serious. It's a little more serious. So careful planning. Careful training, that kind of prevents that kind of crime happening in our schools. So what I think about it is I don't want it to happen, but that's why we do these things, so we don't happen. Does it happen? Sometimes it happens. You know, we have people that steal, and we have people that bring weapons now and then. And we have people that bring drugs or sell drugs. Those are all crimes. You get caught, not only do you get in trouble in school, but you also can get arrested. Those are crimes. How do I feel about them? I don't want those things to happen. And that's why we plan and train and so forth, so they don't happen.
Okay. So for question number 5 would be, how and when did the school district begin to have a formal relationship with the Wakefield Police Department?
That was probably around 1990. We started having a relationship with the police department, 90, 91, something like that. We started out with one officer, and have gradually worked in numbers. Now we have 5 in our school, so we have 1 at every high school. Then we have a 5th one that's kind of a rover and works at our alternative schools and does truancy and those kinds of things. But it started about 1990-91.
Okay, and how has the relationship changed over time?
Well, it's changed in the sense that we now have more officers. We involve them more. At first, when we first started, we school people, we don't necessarily like getting kids into deep, serious trouble. I mean, if you misbehave in class, and you know, there are consequences. You can get suspended from school. You can, you know, you could get a lecture. You know, they could just talk to you, that kind of thing. Or you can be expelled from school. But, police have a different set of rules. Their rules are, and they're governed by state law, that if you break the law, you can go to jail. You can go to jail. So if you brought a marijuana cigarette, you know, to school in the early days, in the 1989, 1990, and we caught you, well, you're not supposed to have drugs in school. We would suspend you from school if it was your first offense for having that marijuana cigarette. But we might not let the police know because it was a small quantity, and what we would do is we'd throw the marijuana cigarette in the toilet and flush the toilet. So you'd be suspended, we'd get rid of the drug, and that was that. And then if you did it a second time, there would be a consequence. But if a police officer catches you with a marijuana cigarette, or you can wind up being cited for having a drug, you can wind up going to juvenile diversion program or something like that, and you can start having a file there. So there was a little bit of friction, but there was a little bit of concern that maybe if we involved the police at the beginning, that kids would really get punished a lot, and kids would wind up getting a record. You know, people didn't like that. But with time, and with the fact that more and more serious stuff has been going on, school officials have gotten more receptive to the idea of having police in this field because we feel that it's important that kids realize that breaking a law in a school is the same as if you broke it outside of school. So if you bring a weapon or bring drugs, you should have that consequence. So that's the difference. At the beginning, we didn't really like it. Now, I think, you know, if we could have a couple more officers, we probably would have them.
Yeah. Okay, so for question number six is, do you think students in the school are as safe as today as they were 25 years ago?
As safe today as they were 25 years ago. Well, we have more kids. We have more opportunity for kids to have things that they shouldn't. So there's more potential for problems nowadays. There's more possibilities for problems. But having said that, are kids as safe as they were 25 years ago? I think so. And the reason why I say that, even though there's more potential, is because our teachers and our principals and our assistant principals are better trained to deal with those problems. So in the past, we didn't get the kind of training. Teachers know if they look at you that they can kind of get an idea if you're on drugs. Students will report to us if you bring something you shouldn't. You know, we now have cameras in our schools, so if you're over there goofing off and writing on the walls, you know, sureños, borbita, or whatever, and they might catch you on the camera, you know. So even though there's more potential for problems because of some of the things that we do, I think we're probably safer today than we were then. We know how to deal with those things. We've got police left. Awesome. So I think we're safe.
Okay. So for number seven is, what are the biggest challenges facing our schools in relationship to crime and law enforcement?
I think the biggest challenges, we've got three big challenges, and I've kind of talked about them throughout my little conversation with you. One is drugs, you know, because back in the 80s, we had drugs, but they weren't as strong as they are now. We've got stronger drugs, the marijuana is stronger. We now have meth, and methamphetamine is something that is very, very potent and dangerous because people can become addicted to that very, very quickly, and it's cheap. You know, so drugs is a concern to us, and it's something that we need to continually work on. Gangs is another thing that we have to continually work on, because gangs come and go. You know, in the mid-80s, gangs started in Hillsboro, and between the schools and the police, we got rid of gang members out of our school. Basically what happened to them, they wound up going to jail, a lot of them. But then they get out of jail. And when they get out of jail, they recruit kids, and before you know it, you have gangs again. And then those kids get in trouble and they go to jail and things get better. And then they get out of jail and then gangs start again. You know, so gangs is a problem, and right now we're seeing more gang behavior in our schools. And the other is access to weapons, because in the past, if students brought a weapon, we were talking about a knife at the most. Now kids carry guns, and guns have the potential of killing, and not killing one, killing many. And so, although we don't have a lot of gun incidents, that's not to say that kids don't have access to guns. They probably still do. And, so that's a concern to us. So those are the kinds of issues that we have right now that are of concern, and those are the kinds of issues that we constantly are working with our police officers. I have these 5 meetings during the year where all of the school resource officers, the police officers, and all of the assistant principals of the district, we get together and we discuss the problems that are in the schools and how we're going to deal with them. I have direct communication with our school resource officers, so if there's a problem at Liberty High School, I'll shift all of the policemen over to Liberty so they can work on that. You know, everything else is okay in the other schools. So we really work hard, but those are the 3 serious issues that we always try to stay on top of, because even if you're at Century High School, if you don't see any kids that act like gang members, there still may be kids that are gang members. And if we ignore it and don't pay attention to it, before you know it, the problem gets bigger. But if we're on top of it and we're paying attention, if we see somebody with graffiti on his notebook or doing hand signs or has a nickname, you know, like Flaco or Loco or Pupui, whatever their name is, you know, that might be a sign that they may be a gang member, and we have to talk to them and make sure that their parents know that we're concerned and always be on top of them.
Okay. So for question number 8, what can you tell me about gangs in your schools and how the issue has changed over time?
Well, gangs in our schools. Well, I've been talking about gangs in our schools, but the gangs, when I was back in the early 80s at Pointer, we started seeing gangs. In fact, I think the first gangs that we remember was called the Old Cruiser Gang or something like that. It was a group of guys, and then they, although they started and they just kind of hung around for you know, they were doing things. And then we started getting the influx of gang kids coming from California, you know, and those were the 18th Street and so forth and so on. And then there was, the other gangs and offshoots of gangs. At the same time, we started having some influence from the Crips and the Bloods, and then there were Asian gangs, Cobras, and that kind of thing. So we started seeing a bunch of different gangs starting to come about in the 80s into the 90s, the mid-80s, late 80s to 90s. But again, the police department, the Washington County sheriffs, they all got real involved with the idea and the school districts, not just Hillsborough and Beaverton and everybody else, that they were going to work hard to get rid of gangs. We looked at how kids dressed, we looked at how kids acted. Some of the rules that came up in the 80s and 90s worked to kind of eliminate some of the gang behavior at the schools. So if we saw graffiti on notebooks, kids could get in trouble or their notebooks could be confiscated. Kids couldn't wear oversized coats, the great big coats in classes, because the thought was that they might have weapons in the pockets, so they had to put them up. They couldn't wear hats in school, or couldn't have hairnets. They couldn't have a variety of things that were associated with gang behavior. That's when we started changing our dress codes so kids wouldn't be looking as gang style as possible. We strengthened our policies on weapons. We got police involved. And then all of a sudden, the gangs kind of disappeared for a while. But they didn't go away. They just kind of disappeared from the schools. We didn't see that, but they were still out in our community. A lot of the gangs now are what we say is a little more covert, and by that I mean they're not as open, you know, about being gang member. Before, they would dress the part. They wanted people to know that they were a gang member. They were a bandana or had seen, you know, in the belt they had it like that, or they had a sweater that said, you know, Trece or whatever it might be, or whatever their gang was. They would have it on their clothes, and then they get caught by the police or they get caught in school. Now they're not as open about it, so it's harder to say who's a gang member. And they've gotten smarter because they don't want to get in trouble necessarily right away or easily. So it's harder for us to identify. So and the styles change. You know, you get, now we've got trends where we see kids who kind of shave little pieces of their eyebrow, and you know, that's kind of a sign maybe that they might be gang involved. And the gold pelon is, you know, bald, and you know, that might be a sign that they're gang involved. You know, the tattoos, a lot of them have tattoos, and if you can see their tattoo, you know that they're gang involved. So, and then their clothing changes. For a while they were wearing brown, for a while they were wearing blue, for a while they were wearing red, now some wear white, for a while some were wearing pink. So colors change, but you have to kind of keep an eye on the different trends and the different styles. So gangs, how they've changed over time is now they're probably a little more, smarter on how to not get themselves caught, number one, and number two, they're a little more dangerous because they've got access to more weapons than what they used to. And they're also more loyal, so they're more inclined that if they have to prove themselves, they'll do it. If that means doing something to you or doing something to me to prove that they're loyal to their gang, they'll do that. And that's why we work so hard to try to keep gangs from our schools.
Okay. So for question number 9 is, what is the school district doing to prevent the gun activity, drug sales, and other types of crime in the school?
Well, on the gang part, we're trying to keep our parents informed, and I put together a lot of information on gangs and gang symbols, gang signs, gang information, and we're going to be publishing that out to parents. We have toughened our code of conduct, the rules that you get for the district. So if you're doing certain kinds of things that are viewed as being gang kind of behavior, you're going to get yourself in trouble that much quicker. We're not going to put up with it. We have 5 police officers, and we might get a 6th one. That's another thing that's going to help us. We attend trainings through the police department, so we stay current on the gang behavior. And we've got this on the district website. We've got what's called a DocuShare. And anytime we find any kind of graffiti that looks like gang graffiti, we put it in there. So Miss Montgomery or Mr. Brown or Mrs. Peterson, your assistant principal and your principal, if they find something here at Century and they want to say, I wonder if that's gang related, they could look at the set of pictures that we have already, and then they could figure out if it is or isn't, and then we can talk in terms of what gang that might be and what we can do. So that's kind of how we're approaching the gang issue, is strengthening our rules, keeping track of the trends, and getting information out to people. On the drugs, what we have to do is train people to be aware of the different drugs and how they affect people. So if you come in and you look a certain way or you're acting a certain way, we're going to know that maybe you're on something, and then we're going to try to detect that and get you some help. So by knowing the effects of, we hope to do that. Plus, we count a lot for school safety. We count a lot on students, because without students, there aren't enough adults here that can watch everything. So if Miss Montgomery has 100 teachers, you know, 100 teachers and assistants and so forth in the school, but there's 1,500 students, there's no way 100 people can watch 1,500 people. So we need students to help us. So if you see something, somebody selling drugs, you're not a tattletale, but you're doing something to help you and to help your school. If you tell the school, hey, you know, they're selling drugs. Maybe you don't want to say it, sir. But you might say, you know, at lunchtime, there's kids over at the cafeteria that sell drugs. You might want to watch. You know, if you don't want to be a tattletale and say it's this person, you can at least say where it's happening and what time it's happening. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but we need students to help us because we can't do it alone. We need students to help us when there's weapons. Because without that, it's very hard for us to know, unless we happen to see somebody with a weapon sticking out. Most of the time we've ever caught a weapon at school, it's because some student has stepped up and said, you know, somebody's got a gun in his locker, somebody's got a knife in his pocket, somebody's got whatever, you know. So those are the kinds of things that we're doing, building relationships with students to keep those other kinds of things, working with the police to get the right kind of training on weapons and drugs. And other crime, and you know, again, the other crime is if somebody steals from you, you need to report it and you need to be able to give an accurate description of what was stolen. If you see somebody around your locker, to be able to tell us, you know, what they look like and that kind of thing. And so observation, if they were to vandalize a car out in the parking lot, you know, hopefully one of our cameras would pick that up, and that's another way of dealing with it, because we've got cameras on the outside looking at our parking lot. So if there's something going on, we can see maybe who that was and hopefully get that person. But those are the kind of things that we're doing to try to combat crime, drugs, weapons, gangs, and
schools. Okay, so what do you think about that? Today it's more easy to identify a person when it's a gang, or was easier in the past?
I think it was easier in the past, because as I said, in the past, they would profile that they were gang members. When they first came out, when gangs first started coming out here in Hillsboro, you know, they wore mostly blue or black or red. And they had the kerchiefs, the pañuelos, the handkerchiefs, you know, they were there and you could see that. Or the belt, or the on their sweaters or their jackets, they would write their gang, you know, or Sureños 13, or, you know, 18, or any of those kinds of things. Or they would write 81, 18 in reverse, or 31, 13 in reverse, just to kind of throw you off a little bit. But they were open about it. Now, they're not as open. So, you know, it's harder for us to be able to tell if they are truly gang involved, because a lot of the way that gang kids dress is also similar to how hip-hop styles are, you know, the baggy pants or the big jacket, or, you know, like a twisted baseball cap or whatever it might be, or the bandana. So it's harder. You don't want to come to everybody and just say, are you a gang member, just because you dress that way. I mean, my son dressed that way. So it's harder now. It wasn't as hard in the beginning, but it's harder now. And that's why we need to be very, very observant to see how things are changing. You know, because the styles change, the colors change, the adornments like medallions change, tattoos, nicknames, the hairstyles change. Just kind of see what's going on that way.
Okay. And what about the punishment? Have they changed?
When we first started with gangs, we did not necessarily punish somebody if they were a gang member. So you could have been with a gang. And just because we knew you were a gang member, as long as you behaved yourself and you went to your classes and no le contradicías a las maestras or whatever, you did your lessons and all that kind of stuff, you wouldn't get in trouble, okay? You only got in trouble as if you were fighting or if all of a sudden you were writing graffiti on the wall for your gang, or you were trying to get somebody to join your gang or that kind of thing, okay? That's when you got in trouble. Nowadays, because we know that gangs are basically criminal, they do criminal things. They don't just get together to have a party. They do criminal things. If we figure out that you're a gang member, you can be in trouble. If you're dressing like a gang member, you can be in trouble. You'll get suspended. And if you don't change your behavior, you can get expelled. So if we caught you in your notebook and you had a bunch of gang stuff on, and we tell you, give us that notebook, you better not do it again. If you do it one more time, we're going to suspend you. And you do it again, you're suspended. And then if you do it again, afuera, you're out. Kicked out of school because we can't have it, because gangs, we know now, cause schools problems. We can't have gang members in our school unless they're willing to behave themselves. And by behaving themselves, you wouldn't be able to dress like a gang member and you wouldn't be able to act like a gang member. And if you're willing to do that, then you'll be okay.
Okay. So for question number 10, as a community member, what is your perception of how the issue of crime has changed in general over the last 25 years?
Well, again, that's kind of the same as the school, because it has changed from what was maybe simpler to more serious now in the past 25 years. And the community, kids would, go break a window, or they'd go steal something out of a yard, or they would litter, they would do those kinds of things. They would break into a car. Those were the kinds of things that they did on the community. But now they're breaking into houses. Now they're armed robberies, where they not only break into a house, but they hold a gun and they say, give me your money, or they beat up people, or they steal cars. They don't break into a car, they steal the car. And then again, the drug issue is the big one, is that with methamphetamine, with meth, crime is greater because people want more money to buy drugs, to buy the methamphetamine. So it's become more serious now than it was then. And that's why, over time in the state of Oregon, you've seen the laws have gotten tougher. And now if a young person, even though he might be a teenager, commits a serious crime, you can wind up getting punished under Measure 11 that says that basically, just because you're 15 or 16 doesn't mean you should be treated treated like a kid. We're going to treat you like an adult, and you're going to be, you beat up a person on the street, you're going to get an automatic 7 years in prison. And so the punishments have gotten more serious because the crime has gotten more serious in the community. I don't know if there's more crime. I just know this crime has gotten more serious.
So, for 11, is what is your general opinion of the law enforcement community here?
I think they do a good job. I think they do a good job. They work very hard to reduce the level of crime, and they try to do it in a way that's fair to everybody in the community. The police chief, Chief Louie in Hillsboro, keeps a very, very close track of the kind of people that are being arrested or stopped. So he wants to make sure that, that the police aren't just picking on Latinos, you know, just because they're Latinos, but are having real reasons for stopping people. Or he wants to make sure that they're not just picking on Asians because they're Asians. So they work hard at not profiling people, but they are serious about, you know, getting rid of crime. They've got specialized officers like Ed Vance, who works very, very closely on truancy issues, because when kids are truant from school, they get themselves in trouble. They've got Victor Castro, who's he knows more about gangs in the community, so he's their gang expert. You've got other officers that are tactical experts, so if for some reason somebody was to come to one of our schools with a weapon, you know, like in Columbine, to shoot people, they would call these expert tactical teams to come and deal with him and get rid of them right away, you know, that kind of stuff. So they're more specialized, they're more sensitive to the community. So I think overall they do a very good job.
Okay, and about the drugs again, do you think in the past was easier to get the drugs than today?
I think drugs have always been available. I think they're just as easy now as they were then. Drugs cost money, so if you've got money, you can always get drugs. If you've got money, you can always get drugs. If you don't have money, you have to steal or you have to do something to get your drugs. You know, or most people that do heavy drugs can't work because they're always on drugs. So,
but like in schools? Like students getting drugs in school?
I think
like selling to normal.
Well, I think it's probably better now that you can't get as the drugs as much at school than you could in the past. But I think part of that is because kids are also smarter. So they're not going to necessarily sell drugs at school because they know they can get caught because of our cameras, because of other students telling. And so they may sell drugs, but they don't sell them at school. They sell them somewhere else.
Okay. And for the next one is, to what extent do you think we have a problem with racial profiling in Hillsboro?
Say that again.
To what extent do you think we have a problem with racial profiling in Hillsboro?
We have a problem with what?
Racial. Racismo.
Oh. Racismo. Racism. Well, that's a serious problem. That was a serious problem, I think, right now, that's hard to deal with. That's hard to deal with because 1980, you know, there are two groups in Hillsboro, basically, two groups, white people and Latinos. You know, we've got here in the lower, we have some Asians, but the two big groups are white people and Latinos. Those are the two big groups. And in 1980 and before, most of the Latino community were migrants. They came and they worked in the summertime and in the fall, and then they left. Most of them, you know, they went back to Texas or California or Mexico or wherever. No todos, not all of them, but a lot of them. They came and then they left. But since 1980 to 2005, the Latino community has grown, and they don't leave anymore. They stay. And in fact, in the last 10 years, the Latino community in Hillsboro has grown by 143%. The white population of our school, I'm talking about our school, the white population is the same today in our schools, Hillsboro School District, as it was 10 years ago. The same. So all of our growth over time has been Latino. So with that, you know, people get concerned because they see people that look a little bit different, especially, you know, if they have more of an Indian background from Mexico. I mean, you're güero, you know, but hay unos otros que son más morenitos, that are a little darker, a little more Indian features. And so they, the whites view that and they say, well, what's going on here? And they're speaking Spanish, and now they've got their stores, and they're selling all this stuff, and you hear the music, and you go to McDonald's and somebody says, you know, with not real good English, you know, can I help you or whatever? And they see that a lot of the workers now are Latino. And so people react two ways. Some people accept it, some people don't accept it. And that's where you wind up getting the racism. And I think there has been more racism in Hillsboro lately, basically because there are more Latinos. And the more, it's getting to a point where people are starting to feel uncomfortable with the Latino population. And so those that can't stand it, can't tolerate it, they start reacting and they start saying things and calling them names and not renting apartments to them or whatever they might be, because they just feel like they're being crowded by them, and they feel that their community is changing too much. You know, I always give advice to my own children that some people say things out of ignorance, like, you know, they all take a siesta, you know. Well, they don't know that, and, you know, that we nap. We don't nap. I don't nap. You don't nap. But that's out of ignorance. And those that say things out of ignorance, you just have to educate them so they know the truth. You know, Mexican people are here, or Salvadorian people, or wherever, they're here to make a better life for themselves, not to make life miserable for other people. They want to make a better life for themselves. You have to educate them. Then there's a group of people that just do things out of hate. They don't want people that look different from them. It doesn't matter if you're Latino, or if you're black, or if you're Asian, or whatever. They don't like people that are different than they are. And those people that act out of hate, you have to confront, and you have to make sure that you tell those people that you're not going to deal with it, that you're not going to put up with it, you're not going to accept that kind of behavior. And that's the two ways that you kind of work with the racism piece. We've done a lot of stuff with our staff. We on racism, where. Because we think that if our teachers exhibit non-racist behavior, then our students will copy that. Okay. So we do this training that's called Understanding Racism, where you look at your own feelings about racism. Now, oftentimes, Latinos especially, they say, oh, she's white, she's racist. But a lot of our Latinos are racist, too. So, you know, they're racist about white people, or they're racist about blacks, or they're racist about other folks. So we don't just train white people to not be racist. We have to train everybody not to be racist. You know, I mean, you see a person from Pakistan, and they've got a turban on their head. You know, somebody says, oh, there's a terrorist, you know. That's racism, because you're saying just because he wears a turban, he's a terrorist. That's racism. You're making the judgment based on their culture, on their ethnic group, and you can't do that. You have to take people for who they are, what they are, individually. And that's what we try to do. But yeah, it's greater today because there's more people of different cultures in Hillsborough today, and especially Latinos. And so, you know, and we have to work at that. We have to work at making people have connections. If you get to know Nina, if you get to know Nina, and Nina gets to know you as a person, then you know you're not a threat, you know she's not a threat, and you guys, you may not become the best of friends, but you at least get along, you know, you mutually coexist. But if you look at her and she looks at you and you don't know each other and you go, oh, he's weird, you go, oh, she's different, and why is he smiling? And that's what happens a lot. You go to your cafeteria and you see a group of Latinos and they're over there joking and they're laughing and so forth and so on. And let's say Nina and a couple of her friends walk by and they start laughing. And Nina may turn around and she goes, you know, and she wonders, you know, why are they acting that way? Or if you're walking down the hallway and you're passing by the gym and the football players are there and then all of a sudden they go like this. Why are they looking at me like that? You know, you wonder what's going on there, and all of a sudden your mind starts working and you start saying, they must be doing it because I'm Mexican, or they must be doing it because I'm white, or they must be doing it because I'm black. And it may not be that. It may not be that reason, but that's what happens to our mind. So we have to continue to work to educate people that the things that they do sometimes, even though it may not be intentional, creates that racism, you know, and it's hard. But there is more now than there was.
Okay, and do you now have some plans to improve that?
To improve racism? Yeah. We're training teachers to identify their racism, and if they can deal with their racism, then they can deal with racism in their schools with students. We have trainings in our schools, sometimes where maybe since you've been here, you've participated in a program called Breaking Down the Walls,
yeah,
where you address some of those issues. Our code of conduct is very, very specific about issues of racism, and if people are calling each other names or so forth, then they're going to get into trouble. One of the things that I'm doing in the community is I've been working with community leaders, people such as the mayor, people such as some of the city council members, people from law enforcement, people from the county. We're creating a citywide committee to address the issues of racism in our community. So we start working on that. So if your parents for some reason go to Hank's, let's say for example, or Fred Meyer, and somebody treats them badly because of who they are, they can come and tell this committee, and then we'll take it up with Fred Meyer and make sure that their behavior changes, or they train their people so they don't act that way towards people that look different than they are. Okay. So those are the kinds of things that we're doing.
Okay. The next question would be like, what would be a difference working now in the district as 20 years before?
What would be the difference, working in the district or not working in the district? Okay, read the question one more time.
What would be the difference working now in the district?
Working now in the district than 25 years ago.
Do you think it was harder to get in?
Well, no. I think 25 years ago things were easier.
Easier.
I think things were easier, simpler. Like I mentioned to you, 25 years ago, the kinds of things that happen now weren't happening then, student behavior was a little bit different, there was the fights, there was that kind of stuff, there were some drugs, but there wasn't a lot. There weren't any gangs, at least here in Oregon. In California, there were gangs in the 80s, there were gangs way before then, but not here in Oregon as much. So, and kids, if they brought a weapon, they didn't bring the kind of weapons that we see today. They might bring a pocket knife, but they didn't bring a big serrated knife, with a blade that long. So things were simpler. Dress was simpler. It didn't dress in a way that was difficult to see whether they had things or not. So it's changed a little bit. Is it worse though, or is it more unsafe? I wouldn't say it's that, but it was simpler. And my role was simpler too, because I was a counselor at that time, so I was working with students and the problems that they had and giving advice to students. So if I happened to see you and you were acting in a certain way, I would give you advice, consejos, so you wouldn't get in trouble. Now my job in my current role is that if you get into serious trouble, you might wind up facing me, and if you face me, you're gone. You're gone. We won't see you in our school anymore, so you don't want to see me. If it has to do with that kind of behavior.
Okay, so what would be some of the different things that makes it hard to work right now?
The biggest thing is, some of the biggest things right now are the fact that we have more people. You put more people into a school, there's more problems because it gets too crowded. Okay? So that's number one. We have more ways of communicating now. So in the past, if you were misbehaving it, or if you wanted to buy drugs, you might have to go to somebody and talk to them face to face. Now you can get on your cell phone and say, hey, do you have some so and so, and text message or call them up or whatever you want, and then you can make an arrangement as to when to get it. Or you can say, you can text message, hey, we're gonna kick this guy's butt tonight, let's get him, we're gonna meet him over here on such and such place, and we're gonna do that. So communication has changed the way you do a lot of things now, and that's hard to deal with, that makes things more difficult for us, because again, if you and we're talking before about doing something criminal or illegal, as your teacher in the room, if you were talking in the room or if you were in the cafeteria and I'm supervising, I might hear something, I might hear a little bit, but if you're text messaging or talking on a cell or whatever, my chances of hearing you guys is going to be a lot harder. So communications has made it a little more difficult. More kids have wheels. So you may not cause a problem here at Century, but you might go to Hill High because your girlfriend's over there and you heard that this guy's trying to pick up on your girlfriend and you're going to go take care of business. So having wheels has made the job more difficult. There's more violence or an acceptance of violence in the media now. In 1980 there weren't as many. There were some violent films, but now a lot of the films are very, very violent. And so kids think, you know, shooting, stabbing, beating up, clubbing, all of those things are part of life, you know. And so they kind of get immune to the human factor that it's alive, that life as a family, the family, you know, is going to be impacted by what you do to that individual. And so that makes it more difficult. Different kinds of drugs makes it more difficult. We used to be able to smell marijuana. We can't smell some of the things that people take nowadays, you know.
So you mean the teachers were able to do that?
To smell marijuana?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. We used to have the police bring these big kits back in the 80s that had all these different drugs. So you had barbiturates, amphetamines, LSD, marijuana, so forth. And then they tell you this, you know. But the one that you could really tell, you know, I mean, if somebody was using it, was marijuana. So they'd light a marijuana cigarette and, you know, let people smell it so they knew what it smelled like. So the kid comes and he smells like that, you know what they've been doing, you know. That could, we used to do that. So. But it is harder.
Yeah.
It is harder with all of those kinds of things. But we're also smarter too, you know, because we get more training and we prepare more.
What would happen to a teacher if in today's day he started smoking marijuana?
Oh, if a teacher smoked marijuana or any kind of drug, they'd get fired.
They'd get fired.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, and the next question is, did before students have the same opportunities as now they do?
Did they have the same opportunities as they then as they do now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, things have changed over time in 25 years. I mean, in 1980, we didn't have a lot of computers. You know, the computers we had weren't, they can't do the things that we did then. We didn't have the kind of specialized programs. We didn't have IB programs or CAMS or those kinds of things. You know, so the opportunity, as you get a bigger high school with more students, you're able to offer more opportunities in terms of specialization. Now, the thing that's different, in 1980, a student had an opportunity to take more classes. And over time, because there's less money, I think you, as students, have had less of an opportunity to take some of the classes that used to be offered. You know, kids could take a band, and could take choir, and it could they had full PE classes, and we had general requirement courses that were more available because of our money situation at that time. But now with the less money, students, instead of being able to take seven classes, can only take six classes. You know, and then as time goes, you can take classes if you've got your credits. But they used to be able to take an additional class back then. And so that's changed in the reverse. You know, you have less opportunity. But with technology, with specialized offerings, things are better now than they were then in terms of what opportunities are available to students.
Okay. Like going to college?
College is a greater opportunity now than it was then, because I think back then more kids were inclined to want to go to work. Into work, they might go to college after that, or might go to community college. But they a lot of them thought about work. You know, a good example is our fact that we used to have wood shop, metal shop, those kinds of things, auto mechanics, for kids to go into trades, you know, to become a carpenter or a sheet metal worker or a mechanic. But now, to be a mechanic, you have to get some specialized training because all of the new cars have all of these computers and all of that stuff. It's very, very difficult. We don't have wood shops and metal shops anymore. Now we have CAD programs and we have robotics and those kinds of things, those are different. So more kids are getting the kind of training that they need to go towards a college career, because it's been proven that the amount of money that you earn is directly related to the amount of education that you get. So if you don't finish school, this is how much you're going to get. If you finish school, this is how much you're going to get. But if you go to college, you're certainly going to get a lot more. And so more kids, with the rising costs of our society, are going towards college, or that's what we're hoping to do.
Okay, and about the amount of students before, but then it gets to get bigger, the amount of students in the year at school, the students, or not?
Does the number of students get bigger or smaller during the year, or or since 1980?
Yes, since 1980.
Since 1980, the number of students has gotten bigger in our schools. At that time, in 1980, we had two high schools. We had just opened Glencoe High School. Hillsboro High was the first one, and then in 1980 we opened Glencoe. So we just had two high schools. And the high schools were not at 10, 11, 12th grade only. 10, 11, 12. Now we have four high schools with 9, 10, 11, 12, and each one of them. Each one of our high schools is around 1,500 students. So we have a lot more students now than we had in 1980.
Okay. And is the next question. Has some rules in the district changed from 1980 to 2005?
I've given you some examples. Again, our dress code has changed because of gang behavior, and also because over time, some of the clothing, especially that the girls wear, has become a little shorter and a little more sexy, you know, so the rules changed not to wear certain kinds of things. Gang dress. A lot of kids also like to wear shirts that that have like beer things on them or that kind of thing, and you can't do that. The rules have changed in terms of just gang behavior, because in 1980 we didn't have anything in our rule books that talked about gangs. Now we do. In 1980, we didn't have things that talked about guns in our schools. You know, we had something that said weapons, don't bring any weapons to school, but we were thinking knives. But now it says guns, it says replicas of guns, so even if it's a fake gun, you can get kicked out of school. BB gun, you can get kicked out of school, doesn't matter what kind of gun. We had a toy gun, a little plastic toy gun like you play at home. You come and you point it at somebody, you think it's a real gun, you can get kicked out of school. So those things have changed. We now have rules about computers. So if you do a computer threat, you know, you write to somebody, I'm going to kill you on the computer, and you email it to them, you can get in trouble and get kicked out of school. Those are some of the ones that have changed. That didn't exist in 1980 and exist now. You can get in trouble for having a phone, you know, and talking on the phone in class, you know, or playing Nintendo or something like that in a little Game Boy in class. Or, you know, we didn't have those in 1980.
Okay, and in order to finish our interview, is there anything else you want to tell me that I haven't already asked?
Yeah, well, the only thing, Martin, is that even though things have changed, you know, and I want to emphasize this again, is that, and there has been a lot of change, as I've mentioned, but even though things have changed, I think because we have changed with those things, with those criminal activities, with those things, schools are just as safe, if not safer today, than they were back in 1980. If we hadn't gotten the specialized training or we weren't staying current with what changes are happening, then maybe not. But we, schools are as safe as they were then, if not more. I guess that's what I close with.
Okay, so then thank you very much, Carlos, and I appreciate very much that you came and have some time so I can interview.
Very good, thank you. Mm-hmm.